Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Miri Yampolsky. Yampolsky is a Russian-born Israeli pianist and graduate of the Peabody Conservatory of Music. She has appeared in solo and chamber performances throughout Europe, Israel, Russia, South Africa, and the United States. She has appeared as a soloist with orchestras such as the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra under the baton of Zubin Mehta, as well as collaborated with such artists as Isaac Stern and Bernard Greenhouse. Yampolsky also teaches chamber music in the music department of Cornell University. Welcome to the show.
All right, thank you.
Now, you're a Russian-born Israeli, and did you come from a community and a family that encouraged you to be a musician?
Absolutely. In fact, everybody in my family, except for my sister, is a musician.
Really?
Yeah. And we were all born in Russia, except for my sister.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so your parents were musicians? Tell us a little bit about how they encouraged
you. My grandparents were pianists. My grandfather was David Oistrakh's pianist for many years. They were a duo. There are many recordings available of them.
Wow.
My grandmother's wife was also an amazing pianist, was my inspiration, the reason why I started. She passed away a few years ago at age 95.
Wow.
Taking a break from practicing.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And my parents are musicians also. Yeah.
And so when you were a child, did you take to the piano, or did they just encourage you and it went from there?
I asked them. I asked them to buy me a piano when I was 6 years old. I would improvise and play around a little bit here and there, wherever I saw a piano. And I wanted to be like my grandmother. So it came from me, definitely. Later on, it was a different story. Of course,
that's
I didn't want to practice.
Work starts. Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
It was really only at the age of 13, I would say, that I decided for myself that I loved it. And I was going to continue with it seriously.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we know many children play instruments and are encouraged to take piano lessons when they're kids. Now, was there a moment in your youth when either a teacher or you knew that you were really gifted and were going to go on to make this a career?
Yeah, it was really around the age of 13, 14, 15 for sure that I started studying piano with a new teacher in Israel who was incredible, especially with children. And she, in a way, rescued me, I would say, from the physical state I was in up until that point, which was very bad, actually. I was I was never taught how to physically approach the piano in a healthy and good way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really tense, and I couldn't play freely, and I was very limited technically. And she just did miracles. And so together with her, we really knew that I loved it and that I was talented enough and mm-hmm. that I became passionate about it.
And so what are the physical aspects? No one would have thought of that as part of piano training. Is it mainly to get the child to relax?
A lot of people have the misconception, including piano teachers, I would say, of certain backgrounds maybe, that piano playing is mostly about moving your fingers and using really a very small part of your hand and arm.
Mm-hmm.
And this, in my opinion, is a source of a lot of troubles for the future. Troubles can start early on in childhood or later on in later age. It really all comes from the shoulders and neck and back. So when this area is not participating freely in the piano playing, when the posture of sitting near the piano is all contracted and all you use is just your fingers and your hand, that's really wrong, and it will cause it will damage your tendons. It can damage your muscles. It can really prevent you from being able to actually play.
That's amazing.
Yes.
I'm sure not a lot of people have thought about that.
Yeah, a lot
very
of people talk about it now, and uh-huh. I was uh-huh. very fortunate also to study with Leon Fleischer in the Peabody Conservatory, and he talks about it a lot because he himself suffered a devastating injury that prevented him from playing for almost 30 years.
My goodness.
He really concentrated on it.
Now, I want to talk to you about this. A lot of us who aren't musically inclined, and I must say I'm one of them, we think of music as this mysterious language. Now, was this a language that you took to immediately, or did you have to learn it?
I think I took to it somewhat immediately. And I think that I'm... it's hard to answer this question. Of course, there is so much to learn. Yeah, and I was very fortunate to have mostly incredible teachers with whom I found common language. So, but I think my background, my parents both play in Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, and my grandmother, and in Israel there is a very rich musical community also of children and teenagers. And so I was very fortunate to always be surrounded by them. And it's kind of a very privileged little society, I mm-hmm. would say, mm-hmm. Is where well supported where I come from. So... it did feel natural to me, mm-hmm. I must say.
Because, you know, you hear about child prodigies in regard yeah. to mathematics.
Yeah, and no, so I was almost, absolutely almost no like child prodigy.
Children don't even have to be taught it. It comes out of them. That's what I was wondering about.
I was
experience.
Absolutely not a child prodigy. Mm. And I suppose that some kids are really extra, incredibly talented, so you could call them child prodigy or... whatever. Mm-hmm. They're still not immune to problems, I think, later on, maybe.
Child prodigies?
Yes, mm-hmm. the child prodigies. But I think the kind of slower and more gradual way is maybe healthier.
The expectations yeah. put on child prodigies must be tremendous. That's part of the thing that can probably cause damage.
Yes. Also, I don't think they have the emotional maturity often and, you know, intellectual maturity and just, I mean, they're children. Mm-hmm. Even you know, 15-year-olds are also children.
Mm-hmm. So did you find that you were able to have a real childhood in spite of this
oh, yeah.
knowledge that you knew you were going to be
yeah.
a pianist?
Yeah. I mean, in elementary school, I often was forced to practice instead of running around on the street with kids some of the time. But I would say that starting from the high school age, I had a very happy upbringing, especially because I went to a high school of art where music was one of the big sort of departments. So I was surrounded by people like me. uh-huh. And there was a very, still is, a very... amazing, actually, chamber music program for young people in Israel, also in the Jerusalem Music Center that I was part of until I finished high school. Mm-hmm. And so I was always surrounded by that. So really from age 13 or 14 on, I didn't really miss any other aspects of childhood.
That's great.
Yeah.
That helps. I'm sure that helps.
Yeah.
As an artist.
It helps.
Uh-huh. Yes. Now everybody knows that great pianists and anybody who plays an instrument has to practice constantly. Now, do you find the chemistry or your interpretations changing at all after you're rehearsing by yourself and then when you come before an audience?
When I go on stage, whether it's a solo performance or chamber music or with orchestra, I think ideally what should happen is that you should forget about everything you've been practicing and thinking and planning and trying out in the practice room or in the rehearsal room and just be inspired and let, you know, the moment do mm-hmm. the job. Ideally, this is what happens. But sometimes, of course, you know, we get nervous and things happen not according to plan. But generally speaking, on stage, it's like my moment mm-hmm. of...
And when you're not nervous, does the performer in you come out? Do you actually add flourish?
Absolutely. When I'm not nervous, uh-huh, yes, that's
you know, the key.
That's
right?
The key. When I'm not nervous. Now, when I play chamber music, I tend to not be nervous. Playing solo is a different story, especially because I hardly really do it anymore. I used to play solo a lot more, but since having children, it turned mostly to chamber music and sometimes with concertos with orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Is it because doing solo performances takes too much preparation?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's much more demanding, I find, both in the amount of hours of practicing, because, of course, playing chamber music well also requires, you know, you need to be in shape and practice, but there is something about sharing the stage and sharing the music with colleagues or in case of playing concerto with orchestra, being surrounded by an orchestra, by other musicians, that takes away the load a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Playing solo is, first of all, technically more demanding because it's just different. When I play solo, I play from memory, so there is that involved too. That part usually is the biggest source of why I get nervous, because I don't want to have memory slips. Cembe music traditionally is played with the music, with the score.
With the score in front of you, yeah.
So not from memory. Some people do, but I never tried.
That would be an amazing challenge, it seems to me.
Yeah, but I would like to play more solo music now that my kids are a little older.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, let's listen. I want to play an excerpt from a work at a concert at a chamber music festival that you did in Tucson.
Yes.
I want to play a Schumann piano quintet. To tell us a little bit about this.
The Schumann piano quintet in E flat major is written for a string quartet and piano. It's one of my most favorite pieces.
Great.
In the chamber music repertoire. in this performance, I collaborated with the Prajak String Quartet, which is an incredible string quartet from the Czech Republic. The Tucson Winter Chamber Music Festival is a fantastic yearly chamber music festival in Tucson, Arizona, that is directed by Peter Raito, who is a wonderful American cellist, who was also, he's the former cellist in Zach's, my husband.
Zach Bjerken's
piano quartet, the LA piano quartet. He's no longer a part of the quartet, but he still runs this festival. So we were fortunate to play there twice together, Zach and I.
Well, let's listen to a little excerpt from it. You know what? I sense so much energy from you when I hear you play the piano. Do you feel particularly energetic when you're out there doing that?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of energy.
And this was a live performance.
This is a live performance, and it's the first time... it's the second time for me to play this piece in my life. Mm-hmm. The first time was 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Do you find a lot of differences between the European audiences and the American audiences?
Oh. It's hard to categorize European audiences in one it's not a one category. It really depends where in Europe you go.
Well, let's say the Netherlands. I know you were just living there recently.
Yeah. Let's say German.
Okay.
Because I play a lot in Germany, actually.
Okay.
Generally speaking, yes, there are differences that are quite consistent. Of course, sometimes it's not always like this. Depends where you go, here and there.
Mm-hmm.
German audiences tend to be more knowledgeable in terms of the actual music. Sometimes they would come backstage after the concert with a score in their hand, or they would ask me really very detailed question about the piece. And no matter where in Germany, even in the smallest towns, American audience... They tend to be more actually excited. Yeah, they, you know, you get standing ovations sometimes, no matter how you play, which is fun. but again, depends where. The audience in Tucson, they were really nice.
So they're enthusiastic.
Enthusiastic. It's pretty much the same people come every year. So they support the festival and, yeah, it was very nice.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Miri Yampolsky. She is a pianist and a teacher at Cornell University. Now, you work with many different conductors, including Zubin Mehta.
Yes.
In what ways do the sensibilities and the talents of conductors change your creativity?
Well, having played under Zubin Mehta was actually, and he was actually the first conductor I've ever played with, other than my high school orchestra, the very same year. I was 16 when I played with him for the first time. And he's just, I cannot imagine any conductor being more amazing, more sensitive as an accompanist also, for a soloist, young or old, doesn't matter, than him. So it was just really as good as it gets. And so he was supportive, he was wonderful, he was nice, he was, of course,
Did you learn from him as well?
Yeah, he gave me quite a lesson, actually. Yeah.
And then so you weren't intimidated by him, right?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can get intimidated by conductors who try to teach you and try to, you know, tell you that you have no idea what you're doing, that you don't understand the style. Luckily, here in Ithaca, we have wonderful conductors.
But I would think a conductor would bring out either the best or the worst in a musician, depending on your relationship with him or her.
That's very possible. A conductor can ruin the concert, too, sometimes, for a soloist.
Uh-huh. But would the audience know that, or is it something that only you would know because of behind the scenes?
Audience could know if they know the piece well. For example, if there are power struggles about tempo or about, you know, it's mostly about tempo, I suppose, between soloist and conductor, and about being together, you know, the conductor catching the soloist, which he's supposed to be able to do, but sometimes when they don't, they...
Sometimes the musicians are in revolt.
Sorry?
Sometimes the musicians are revolting against the conductor if there's behind-the-scenes tensions?
Maybe. I mean, I never did that, but it will backfire.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Now, you were a juror for an international chamber music company in the Netherlands. How do you do that? Do you take off your pianist robes and become a teacher? How do you judge?
Oh, that was really, really hard. It was really first time for me to be judging a competition on such high level. It was an international competition, so ensembles came from all over the world. And it was mainly piano trios, which is piano, violin, cello, and string quartets, so without piano. And my colleague judges were much more experienced than me and quite a bit older. I mean, more experienced in terms of judging this kind of competitions. Mm-hmm. And they had their own system. It was all very clear to them how to judge, 30 string quartets and 15 piano trios for 3 prizes. And for me, I was absolutely terrified because, it's very hard to know what to compare it to. Do you set yourself your highest goal as the best, as a first prize, or do you kind of figure out what is the general level and you judge according to that? Well, what happens sometimes is that you would listen to ensembles for 3 hours and it would be sort of an okay level, not too bad, not too good, and then suddenly there will be an ensemble that will just phenomenal. So it's very confusing. Another
is it a matter of your own taste?
Yes. So there you have to also make the distinction between your own taste and what is acceptable or not, because your own taste is not the same taste of your colleagues. And then you also think to yourself, well, so it's your own taste. It doesn't mean that these young people are supposed to play like that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So where is the fine line between what is your own taste and what is a good taste, or what is, you know, an appropriate interpretation? Mm-hmm. And another, I just have to say this, another, probably the most difficult aspect was that I'm 36 years old, so my last international competition as a participant was not that long ago. And so I really was just, my heart was so torn because I felt that I was closer to them than being a judge. You know, I felt like, well, who am I to judge these people? I know what it takes to be there. I know how much work it, you know, required. Yeah. And
did this make you change your ideas about entering competitions?
Well, I'm not planning to enter any competitions. I'm too old for that. But I think competitions actually are a good thing. I'm probably in a minority of people who would say that. Because in my experience, what competitions did to me, they made me work harder and learn more repertoire, meet wonderful people. Yes, it's nerve-wracking, and yes, you know, it's sometimes it's too much, and a lot of times it's not fair. But
it's good for the artist.
My experiences were, for the most part, very good. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Also, when I didn't win.
Ah.
Yes,
indeed.
Definitely. Uh-huh. Yes, it was justified, uh-huh. I would say. Uh-huh. 99%.
I want to listen to another excerpt from the Chamber Music Festival in Tucson. This is a Mendelssohn piece. It's the sextet for piano and strings. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's a very early piece by Mendelssohn. He wrote it, I think, when he was either 13 or 14 years old.
Wow.
It's one of his earliest pieces. Very demanding for piano, like most of his pieces, like a piano concerto, technically speaking. And it was a first time for me. I didn't know this piece before. And I had incredible colleagues. It's written for violin, two violas, cello, double bass, and piano. And the violinist is my new colleague at Cornell, the music department, Joseph Flynn, who is absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to it.
Okay.
That's great. I love Mendelssohn. I love this kind of music.
It's going to be a Mendelssohn year. Yeah, 2009.
So there's going to be
a lot of Mendelssohn.
I'll be alive for that.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about the fact that you teach chamber music at Cornell University. You know, obviously you work with accomplished musicians. So what do you actually teach?
I teach students that major mostly in other things in Cornell. So most of my students are not music majors. Mm. Most of them are undergrads and some of them are grad students. And I've been doing this for 3.5 years. Yeah, I coach them in, you know, chamber music groups.
Is that mainly what you do? You're coaching and inspiring? And
I coach them, yes. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, I also play in one of the groups. So we really collaborate. It's more rehearsing rather than coaching because it's, you know, It's like everybody is coaching everybody, and this is, I find it to be very satisfying.
Do you think you bring a different sensibility to teaching because you have gone to so many international schools and learned with so many international people?
I would like to believe so, but sometimes I feel insecure. I heard that everybody does, but I always question my, you know, what do I bring to the room mm-hmm. at the time of the coaching. I try to be, on one hand, you know, I'm the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand...
you still feel like you're a student in some ways?
Sometimes, in a good way. Because I would like to also learn from my students, and I do a lot. When I first started teaching, it was piano lessons, you know, a while ago.
One-on-one,
maybe 10 years ago or so. And I really felt like after 1 year of doing that, I felt like I learned from them probably at least as much as they learn from me, if not more. Sometimes it's frustrating. Cornell students tend to be very, very busy, so it's hard to get them all together in one room.
Oh, bad.
Yeah.
Now, before we run out of time, I want to talk to you about the May Fest.
Yeah.
Your husband, the accomplished pianist, Zach Bierken, started this spring.
Yes.
And tell us where the inspiration came from and what to expect in the future.
Well, chamber music is what both of us love doing the most. I think I can speak for him, too. And ever since we've started living here and teaching, Zach started before me, but our dream had always been to start a chamber music festival, an international one on the highest level. And Ithaca is a small town and, you know, a small community, small music department. So we were able to do here and there projects, but we really were dreaming about something regular on just the biggest scale. I mean, in terms of, you know, quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so... 2 years ago, it became possible financially, and so we immediately thought about starting this. And this past May, we did it for the first time, and it's going to be an annual event mm-hmm. every May. That's why it's called May Fest.
Now, this seems to be a way for you guys to keep classical music alive. You know,
yeah.
You always hear about the death of classical music. I assume it was a success.
I heard it was a success. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it that time, but I heard it was really wonderful. I listened to some of the recordings. I was personally involved in inviting the artists, so they were handpicked. Uh-huh. And I have to say also that one of my biggest goals for this in the future, and I'm trying to figure out how to do it, is to use it as an outreach also, not just to bring international, you know, names from the chamber music scene in the world, but also to involve children, young people. So not college age, you know, young kids or high school age, and to give them a stage or some kind of means to also perform. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to me.
That's great.
Yes.
Well, we're almost out of time. Can we expect you to be giving any performances anytime in the future?
In Ithaca, yes. I'm going to play in the Unitarian Church as a part of the Cayuga Chamber Orchestra Chamber Music Series on the 21st of September. I will play a recital with the wonderful clarinetist Rick Feria up in Ithaca College on the 27th of September. And, yeah, there will be more.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Well, Mary Yampolsky, we have run out of time, and I thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to seeing you play in the future.
Thank you very much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.